When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Welcome back to the best part of your week. Today, we're taking a dive into Lauren's head.
Hello, quote-unquote intellectuals who spend way too much time on BuzzFeed surveys.
Quote-unquote intellectuals?
I mentioned that they spend way too much time on BuzzFeed surveys.
So is that a self-described quote-unquote?
Like, absolutely.
They call themselves intellectuals, but they're not?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I love when you start off our podcast by insulting our listeners.
It's only because we love
you. It's a great marketing tactic. Thank you.
Welcome back to Hyperfocus. We're excited to have you back again for another week. We've been doing this for a while now, so we're glad you're still here.
Way to change the subject from insulting our listeners, but it's true.
We're still glad to have you here.
As much as we insult you, we're glad to have you here.
I think it's fair.
No.
All right, so...
No. Give me another line other than it's fair.
I think it's justified.
Okay, you're right. All right, what do we got today?
All right, so first of all, before we get started, as per usual, I have to apologize for a couple of things on your behalf.
Shoot, I was hoping you'd forget.
A lot of them are in the same vein based on the last episode, because the last episode left a lingering memory, which I'm going to apologize for.
I have no idea. Well, I have no idea what you're talking about. A lot of your apologies are in the same vein as my episode.
Well,
that's the point.
No. The three apologies all correspond with one another.
Okay. I wonder if you guys just heard my shoulder crack. That was awesome.
The first thing I'd like to apologize for is Rachel's continuous choice of dark topics on this fun podcast. She got us started with Wojtek, and it's just gone downhill from there.
There's nowhere to go but down from Wojtek. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, good point. I also wanted to apologize for the general discussion of death in the last episode and Rachel's fixation on death in the last episode.
It's not going to get any better.
I also would like to apologize for the corresponding gruesome and grotesque pictures on her Instagram on our Instagram that took place after our last episode.
Dead bodies.
Yikes. So before we get started on this episode, I wanted to offer a little bit of a trigger warning. I'm a little bit hypocritical after my apologies for Rachel's episode, because I'm going to give trigger warnings for suicide, murder, war, death, and conspiracy.
Ooh.
So.
This is going to be interesting.
Are you ready for this, Rachel?
I am so ready.
All right. So today we're going to talk about the dark conspiracy surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death.
Ooh, okay, yes.
Yeah.
I'm good. Okay,
so when I first started researching this, I was like, there's no way there's any credibility to this conspiracy. Everybody's sad when their favorite celebrity dies. And, you know, I don't know that I'm going to find any actual facts on this. I got really into it because there is so much here.
Would you say that you hyper-focused on it?
That might be true.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. That's why we're here, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, also, trigger warning for talking crap about the U.S. government. So in February of 19...
Tell our FBI agents to stop listening.
To be fair, we're talking about the government between the 60s and the 80s in L.A. So, all right. So first, I'm going to explain kind of the circumstances surrounding her suicide and just like some of the weird details there. So on August 5th, 1962... the police arrived to Monroe's house, and she was already dead, and she had been for some time. The details of this...
Sometime.
I will get there.
Now? Okay.
The details for this are... Yeah, like, she had died that night, but the details on this are important for the rest of the episode. So she was naked, her face, she was not wearing makeup, and her hair and her room were messy, and she was laying in a semi-fetal position. According to her psychiatrist, she also had her phone, quote, clutched fiercely in her right hand, unquote. And because there was a crumpled paper with a phone number on the scene, investigators think she was calling John F. Kennedy. We'll get to those details a little bit later.
Was it his number?
Yes, it was okay. His number. So Monroe's housekeeper, Eunice Murray, was the only person home when she actually died.
Okay.
So she was alerted that something was wrong because she saw a telephone cord under Monroe's door. And usually she would put her phone outside of her door and muffle it with pillows so she wouldn't be bothered at night. So seeing her phone in her room was enough of a reason for the housekeeper to freak out about that situation. But instead of calling the police, she called Monroe's psychiatrist. He came.
But she knew she was dead.
She didn't know what was wrong.
She just saw the phone.
She knew something was wrong, though. I saw one thing that said that she was, like, trying to get her attention and wasn't hearing anything. It was enough that she needed somebody to come in the middle of the night. But for some reason, she didn't think the police were her best option.
Sure.
So she called...
Well, L.A. in the 60s.
Oh, yeah. So she called Monroe's psychiatrist, who broke into the window of her room and went to go check her vitals. She was unresponsive. So this is when you call the cops, right?
You know, I personally would have called them first, but I have a feeling we've got a couple more steps to get there.
Yeah. So okay. The next thing is Dr. Engelberg, who was her internist, came before he called an ambulance. He came, he checked her vitals, he realized that she was dead, and then he was like, all right, it's time to call the cops. So there's a lot of suspicious things about that time frame that we will talk about later.
Okay.
But those are the facts based on those three individuals' accounts. They found pill bottles beside her bed. The autopsy report stated that the cause of death was an acute barbiturate poisoning due to ingestion of overdose. That was the wording. Basically, she overdosed on the sleeping pills that she had been... Yeah, those are sleeping pills that she had been prescribed for those of you like me who didn't know before this episode. The mode of death was probable suicide. That's what was listed. She had spoken to Dr. Greenson, who's her psychiatrist, on the phone at 5:15 on the Saturday before her death, and she was complaining that she couldn't sleep. So that's when she was actually prescribed the sleeping pills. It was only a few days before she actually died. For some people... That sounds like, oh, she didn't know how well they could be abused. She may have accidentally killed herself.
Yeah, yeah.
To other people, it sounds suspicious that those would have been prescribed at the time they were prescribed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if we were going to get an equivocal death analysis, but I have a feeling you're getting there.
Yep, yep. Okay. So before we keep going, I want to go a little bit into Monroe's background.
Okay.
So the first thing is that her mother was incredibly emotionally unstable, and she spent a lot of time in an asylum. So there was a history of mental illness in Monroe's family from her mother. She also had a history of mental illness, Monroe did, and was under constant psychiatric care at this point. Like, was seeing her psychiatrist every day.
Okay.
And wow. Was medicated. So in the year leading up to her death, though, she had just bought her first home and had a few career things that were going really well. So it seems like things were on the up. But she also was a bit more of a mess in public than normal. Her nails were chipped was the example. Rumors were... which
I guess I'm always a mess in
public
then.
Yeah, yeah. But rumors were also spreading about her and John F. Kennedy at the time. And she had just divorced her third husband. She and her most recent husband had also had several miscarriages, and she blamed herself for that because of her alcohol and drug abuse. Mm. So
I'm curious, you may have said this. If you did, I don't remember. How old was she at this point?
36.
Okay.
Another thing is that in the media, just kind of contributing to her depression, she had said, quote, being a sex symbol is a heavy load to carry, especially when one is tired, hurt, and bewildered. She also had said, quote, Hollywood is a place where they'll pay you $1,000 for a kiss and 50 cents for your soul, unquote.
True.
She was absolutely right. And yeah. Also because of that, her life was really bleak. As with many celebrities' deaths, fans immediately believed that the suicide was false,
mm-hmm.
And that it was kind of an assault on her character. And they thought that her death was at least a tragic accident, at most a murder.
Okay.
So that's where this gets started. So this was in the 1960s that she died. The Los Angeles District Attorney's Office didn't find evidence of murder when they did a 1982 investigation. They did this investigation because of the theories
that were
20
years after her death.
20 years later. So they went and looked over all of the evidence at that point. They didn't find any evidence, but we're going to unpack that information. So a senior forensic pathologist looked over the original medical findings, and he agreed with them, the senior pathologist that they hired. However, Dr. Stephen Karch, who's a retired assistant medical examiner, also reviewed the results, and he found them very questionable, as he noted that Monroe's internist, Dr. Engelberg, who we mentioned earlier, he's the third one that saw her dead. Had told the DA that only one of the medications that killed her had been prescribed by him, So Dr. Karch wonders how she got access to the other medication. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's weird is that the records indicate that no drugs were actually removed from the scene. But her business manager, Inez Melson, told Summers, who was an investigator, I wanted to mention, I also got a lot of this information from Summers' article. Summers also wrote a book. It's very helpful. Highly recommend it. It will be linked. But Inez Melson told Summers that she threw away the medication once the police were gone.
So when you say it wasn't taken from the scene, like it wasn't taken in as evidence?
That's what Summers uncovered. But again, this was 20 years later, so it's really hard to know.
Yeah.
There's other things later
There's
other things later that indicate that they may have had it.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But one question was that if Inez Melson actually did throw it away, how were the medication containers analyzed at the coroner's lab? Because that was in the report.
Okay, so
yeah.
It was evidence. Yeah.
Right. So apparently after they were analyzed, though, they were destroyed, which is really suspicious. Toxicologist Dr. Raymond Abernathy, who was in charge at the time, wouldn't comment on it. When he was asked, Dr. Karch said, there's absolutely no reason you would throw it out. He said, after looking at all of the evidence, he said, quote, you can't rule out the possibility that Marilyn Monroe was murdered. If I had my druthers, I would classify this death as undetermined causes. Mm-hmm. To me, I'm not by nature a conspiracy theorist. The circumstances of her death remain a mystery.
So when you say that the medication bottles were destroyed, was that like immediately after they were analyzed?
So I don't know exactly. I couldn't find the time frame on that, but I know that there was one, they had analyzed that, and I don't know if it was the 82 investigation or more shortly after in the 60s, but somewhere in that time frame.
I feel like that's a pretty big distinction though, because like, you know, if evidence is kept for 20 years before it's disposed of, that's different than disposing of it 3 days after it's taken in as evidence.
Right. So I really don't know the time frame on that. I do know that Dr. Karch found it really suspicious when he looked into it.
And he looked into it when?
I think the 80s.
Was he the one who did the 82 investigation?
No, that was the district attorney's office. He was responding to that. So I think he did it in the 80s. So,
okay.
Yeah. So Sergeant Jack Clemens, who was the officer who first came to the scene, stated in the 1982 investigation that the scene didn't look, quote, kosher to him.
Okay.
I love that description.
Yeah.
I think that's excellent. But the...
Something's off kilter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the DA just dismissed what he said because he wasn't super experienced in suicides.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, also, like, that description... It doesn't really sound like it's backed by fact. Like that's an intuition thing.
Yep.
Which intuition definitely plays into.
It can be strong.
It definitely plays into murder investigations. Like sometimes, and not only murder investigations, but sometimes like you get those like vibes from someone or something, and that's usually for a reason. Like there's usually a logical explanation for why.
Right. So in the DA investigation, they also didn't interview Sergeant Robert Byron, which is weird. He's the homicide detective that took over for Clemens, and he's the one that filed the only 3 police reports that have survived. He also had stated doubts about Monroe's housekeeper, which he had indicated in a report just 3 days after Monroe's death. So she was a little sketchy. In 1986, he did an interview with Summers, the investigator, and said she was, quote, vague and possibly evasive in answering questions pertaining to the activities of Miss Monroe. It is not known whether this is or is not intentional, unquote.
That the housekeeper was vague about it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one theory is that because Monroe's attorney had come and talked with her, apparently her response had seemed rehearsed. And so people think that the attorney just prepped her on what to say, in which case she could have been nervous. She also could have been hiding something.
Why would Monroe's attorney, though, like be defending someone who's a suspect in her death?
I mean, it's really hard to know.
Right?
It depends on the conspiracy you're following on this, which we'll get to.
Because to me, like, if you are representing someone who's has been murdered, like, you don't try to cover up for someone who may have had something to do with it unless it was something along the lines of, like, an assisted suicide.
Right. And I think that that's part of why this case is so weird is because there's so much different information, and because of the involvement of the Kennedys, it becomes really weird politically.
And it was just such a high-profile case to begin with.
Exactly. Yeah. So I also thought it was interesting Monroe's attorney was also Frank Sinatra's attorney. Thought that was a little fun fact. Doesn't matter at all.
I've got a question that I don't know if you'll know the answer to, but do you know like what kind of attorney this person was? Because
I don't know.
You can have a lot of different kind of lawyers. Like this could be her contract lawyer.
That's true.
Like, you can get really specific with lawyers.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily something to protect her in something like this, like a contract lawyer, a business lawyer, like that's going to be someone who's helping her, you know, get jobs and make sure she's getting a good deal. Like there's a lot that could like factor into that.
And the other thing is that she was really mentally unstable. So if her psychiatrist was like speaking on her behalf and like, hey, this is what we need. I don't know exactly what that relationship was like.
Right.
People indicate different levels of her mental stability. So that's very interesting with that also. But Byron and Clemens, who were the two investigators that we just talked about, the two police investigators, both thought that the witnesses were trying to cover the time frame of what had happened. Mm-hmm. And it seems like this is with good reason. The housekeeper and the doctors said that she was found dead at 3:30 a.m.
Okay.
But a 1985 interview with Natalie Jacobs, the widow of Monroe's press spokesman.
Okay.
Yeah. So said that they knew she was dead before 11 p.m. She knew that time frame because they were at a concert at the time and he'd gotten the call. A previous employee also said that her press spokesman went to her house at 11 p.m. There was a couple of different people that were like, no, this was going down at 11.
Right. And if someone dies in the middle of the night, why would you find them at 3:30?
Exactly.
Like, why would the housekeeper be up? And, like, you know, do we even know if the housekeeper lived there? Like, if she lived there, that makes it a little bit more plausible.
Yeah, I think that she did. But it looked like it from the research I was looking at, but I don't know for sure.
Right. And then even then, it's like, it's 3:30 in the morning. You're exhausted. You see something looks a little odd. You're like, I'll deal with that in the morning.
Yep. So her story to the cops is that she saw it and was worried at like 10 or 11.
Right.
And then she didn't investigate it until 3:30.
Because, like, it didn't change?
Exactly. But she wouldn't have called the press spokesman and he wouldn't have been there at that time.
Right.
The other interesting thing is that his wife said that apparently Jacobs went to start damage control.
That was the thing I was going to suggest, is that like the only reason you would do that is you're thinking like, okay, she's getting out of hand. We need to get a handle on this in the media before anything gets out about it.
Right.
So that,
which could explain why they didn't call the cops till 3:30.
Right. That would make sense why they would call like their publicist. But then by the time you actually find her and realize she's not responding, the fact that they didn't call the police right away is what's weird.
Yeah. So Jacobs's wife said, quote, he had to fudge the press. He went to Marilyn's house and fudged everything, unquote.
The publicist?
The publicist's wife said that. The publicist was dead at the time of these interviews.
Right. His widow, yeah.
So the assistant DA at the time of the investigation said that the 1982 investigation said that they would have investigated further if they'd realized that those individuals had known she was dead for 5 or 6 hours before the police were called.
Could they not investigate further when they said that? I guess, like, they closed
they
it.
They haven't. They must. Yeah. So after her death, like we've been talking about, in 1982, they reviewed the circumstances of her death. Due to the controversy and the claim by a coroner's aide that he'd been coerced into signing her death certificate.
The coroner said that?
The coroner's aide said that he'd been coerced. To be honest.
The coroner's aide said that the coroner was coerced.
No, I think the coroner's aide had been coerced into signing it. I didn't find a lot on that. Not a lot of people talk about it. Kind of seems to me like you're doing that for publicity, but I also could be super wrong.
Right.
And it's just
it could be one of those things that is like, it was in line with the findings, but he wanted, you know, he's like, this is a high profile case. We should look into it more. But it had been a standard autopsy. Like, you know, it could have been like completely normal, like a completely normal situation. But because of the mystery surrounding the case, he was like, oh, I signed it only being 98% sure.
Right.
Or it could be that he was like fully coerced.
Yep.
Who knows?
Yeah, we really don't know. And that's the weird thing about this case. So in 1985, Anthony Summers, who's the researcher and investigator we've been talking about, began pressing the FBI for documents. And although the initial given documents were very highly censored, he had a lawyer try to push the FBI for documents every year. Finally, between 2005 and 2006, the FBI gave him 100 pages, and he got 500 more from the case review from 1982.
So what was the, because I don't think we've mentioned this yet, what was the FBI's involvement in this during the active investigation?
To be honest, I don't really know. It's mostly just talked about the police handling it. So maybe if they initially just ruled it as a suicide, the FBI weren't involved in it. It looks like it was the 1982 report. We're also going to get to the FBI also had been following Monroe, and we're going to talk about that. So actually, in February of 1962, which is the year that she died, Monroe was in Mexico City in a hotel suite hanging out with Frederick Vanderbilt Field, who was the great-great-grandson of railroad tycoon Cornelius Vanderbilt. The FBI were concerned about the situation because she'd been hanging out with JFK at his birthday party only 3 weeks earlier. At this birthday party, that's when the scandal started to break between Monroe and JFK. So basically, she was hired to sing a very breathy and soulful and sexy happy birthday, Mr. President.
Familiar.
She was actually sewn into her dress because it was so tight.
Really?
And it was made to look like she was naked. Like, this was a very sexy performance. JFK's response to this was, quote, "I can now retire from politics after having had happy birthday sung to me such a sweet, wholesome way."
Oh.
So that was his response. So because she had been hanging out, allegedly having an affair, most likely having an affair with JFK,
right.
Before this point, the FBI were really concerned because Field was an outspoken communist. He was a loud and proud supporter of communism.
Field was
the guy that she was hanging out with in Mexico City.
The relative of Vanderbilt, yeah.
Exactly. So he was already under watch by the FBI. So
just for
Marilyn Monroe.
Sketchy involvements.
Yeah, and being very loudly supportive. She flew to Mexico City.
Yeah.
They were very close friends. She also had connection to the Kennedys. You can see why the FBI would be concerned about a security leak. She also had been allegedly having an affair with Robert, John's brother.
Oh.
So, yep, she started hanging out with JFK in the 60s and Robert in 62. The reason I'm saying hanging out, not sleeping with, is there's very definitive evidence that they knew each other.
Yeah.
Sleeping together is the more sketchy part.
That's not something you want to assume about people.
Yep. There's also a lot of evidence. We'll get to that, too. So, naturally, the FBI was concerned that Monroe was a security risk, especially because she would drink a lot and knew a lot of information.
Is there an assassination theory that the FBI killed her?
We're getting there.
Okay.
Yes. But with
I love wild theories.
I do, too. Also, Monroe had strong leftist views. Part of the reason that she first connected with Robert Kennedy is because she would debate him on things. She was decidedly leftist. She also, her internist, her housekeeper, and her psychiatrist all had ties to communism.
That's interesting.
And if you remember, JFK was very outspoken against communism.
Right.
And fought communism a lot.
When you say connections to communism, like,
all have different types of connections.
Okay. Some more actively involved than others. Okay.
Yep. But it's even still interesting that so many people in her immediate circle have documented ties to communism in general and political beliefs in communism. In July of 1962, there was a confrontation between the West and communist nations. As we know, massive amounts of death. JFK is president. Things are weird and sad and hard.
Things are weird and sad and hard. Yeah.
But on July 26th, the FBI Domestic Intelligence Division, which is counterespionage, received word from Mexico City that Marilyn Monroe had gotten lunch at the residence of Peter Lawford and President Kennedy. JFK.
President JFK.
Peter Lawford was JFK's brother-in-law.
Okay.
It also stated her views at that time as, quote, positively and concisely leftist, unquote. That's how the FBI described her. This document was released just 10 days before her suspicious death.
It was, released to the public?
I think that it was documented July 26th.
Okay. But that, like, they just like telling everyone, like, look out, Marilyn Monroe's a communist.
No, it was that she was flagged by them.
Right.
Just 10 days before her death.
Gotcha.
Super suspicious timing.
Internally released.
Yep. Another thing that's interesting, switching gears a little bit about her suicide specifically, is that before her death, she had talked about suicide with Jeanne Carmen, who's a fellow actress, according to the 1982 investigation. They covered that. She depicted exactly how she would do it if she were to kill herself.
Did it match?
No. She said she would, quote, dress in a white nightgown, take an overdose of pills, and go to bed. The sheets and spread would be white, and she would have her hair and makeup done. A friend would be informed of the suicide to make sure that after her death, she was neatly positioned and the bedroom was in order.
That's odd to me.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, if you're really feeling that being a sex symbol and being such a public face, so with so much requirement of beauty that you can't walk outside with nails chipped, like, why? And like, you're feeling the burden of that. Why would you want to present yourself in a way that's pleasing to the public? You know, I feel like this, a lot of, I mean, I can't really speak for her, but it seems to me like in a depressive state, like, you would want to rebel against that.
Yeah.
And if you're to the point where you're suicidal about it, you wouldn't want to go out in a way that was pleasing to the public. Like,
I mean, unless if you're, I don't know, if you wanted to go out with dignity, though. You know what I mean? If so much of your life had been.
If you feel like, you know, Hollywood will give you 50 cents for your soul.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be more dignified to go out in a way that's human and not fabricated?
Yeah. I really don't know the answer to that. And unfortunately,
no one will.
Yeah.
But
she can't tell us. But the other thing that's very interesting, Becky Aldridge, who's another private investigator who's looked into this case, noted that in her previous attempts, she had always left a note. So she had attempted suicide before. Mm. When she actually died, there was no note. So that's
what were her attempts like? Were they overdoses?
Probably, I don't know for sure. I don't think that was super significant to the case, so they didn't talk about it a whole lot.
I feel like that would be significant to the case, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they ignored it.
Yeah.
Downplayed it.
The other thing is that Aldridge, the PI, stated that she found that there were mysterious bruises on her hips that could indicate either violence or an injection. So that goes to the theory with her overdose that she was injected with something.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you get like track marks if someone was injecting you with something?
Yeah, it feels like you probably would. Like, it's a very interesting...
I want to know what these bruises looked like.
I really don't know. It's actually the only place I could find a
message. Is her autopsy public?
Oh, it might be.
I know what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah.
After this, after we record. Actually, I'm going to look it up now, but keep talking.
Okay.
I'm just going to see if it's available.
Okay. So switching back to her connection with the Kennedys, since we've really established like the circumstances surrounding her suicide, or at least what we know about the circumstances surrounding her suicide, or her death, or her murder, whatever we're going to call this. According to one of Jacobs' assistants, he knew about Marilyn's connection to the Kennedys. Jacobs was her publicist.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, she was on and off with JFK starting in 1960. Then in 1962, she spent time with Robert and began talking about, quote, a new man in my life, unquote, who she only revealed once to a friend as, quote, the general.
Oh.
Which that's how the Justice Department insiders referred to Robert.
Okay.
Yep. So basically she wouldn't say any more than that.
That was just like his code name.
Right. She wouldn't say any more than that about who she was sleeping with and had indicated that it was because of security concerns, that he was somebody high profile. So that's very strong very strong evidence that she was with at least one, probably both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, Robert's secretary, Angie Novello, confirmed that they had been exchanging cars, and the FBI's former agent in charge, Bill Simon, once let him borrow his car to visit her.
Okay.
Lots of evidence that they were together.
Yeah.
To
some extent.
Yep. There's also some controversy over whether or not Robert was there on the day of her death, which I thought was very interesting.
Like, was visiting her at her residence?
So, according to the DA review, there's no evidence that he was in LA. Newspapers said he was in San Francisco at the time.
Okay.
But there were some other notable police investigators connected to the case who said that he was in LA. Monroe's housekeeper said he went to her home. And so do several other people. One thing I will say with her housekeeper, though, if we're going to discredit her earlier information, we probably shouldn't trust her now.
Mm.
She's a sketchy source in general. But she does say that he was at her home. So that's interesting.
Okay.
In her final few hours, Monroe had several phone conversations. Apparently, one of them was to a scriptwriter friend in Mexico City. He said that she told him, quote, something that would shock the world, unquote. But he wouldn't say what it was that she told him.
Oh, come on.
I know. And then
that just screams publicity stunt.
Oh, like, it totally does.
Either she didn't tell him anything or she told him something personal.
Yep.
And he never even should have said.
Yep.
That she told him something, like something personal that wouldn't contribute to the investigation.
Yep. Another.
Or it was really minor and he should have just told the police.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then at 9:30 p.m., Monroe called Sydney Guileroff. Sorry, I probably butchered that name. She was a Hollywood hairdresser and a confidant to several stars. Sydney wrote that before Monroe's death, she sounded frantic. She had said, quote, Robert Kennedy was here threatening me, yelling at me. I'm having an affair with him. I had an affair with JFK as well.
Goodness.
Yeah. Unquote. She said that Robert Kennedy had journeyed to Los Angeles that afternoon, not merely to break off his own affair, but to warn Monroe about ever phoning the White House again. It's over, he had told her. Now Marilyn was sobbing on the phone. I'm frightened. I know a lot of secrets about what has gone on in Washington. Dangerous ones.
How credible is this source? Because
that's what I was going to say.
That is this significant.
This looks one of two ways to me. The first is that this information was suppressed and Monroe really did know a lot and really did need to be silenced. Mm. The other thing that could be is that this story is just a little bit too perfect.
Yeah.
If this hairdresser had seen the stories in the news and been like, hey, this is suspicious. She called me. Oh, here's all the things. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's really hard to know. But if that's true, that's really big evidence.
The mind fills in a lot of missing details. And it's very possible that 50, 60, 90% of her account is true.
Yep.
And, you know, there are some false memories.
So with that, take any of the individual quotes, I will say, with a grain of salt, because we don't know what people were actually thinking. And this is a suspicious case. Being said, it's very interesting information.
That also being said, like, let's assume she did know some federal secrets or whatever. That's not necessarily, like, I don't know how to say this. If she did know them, it's not necessarily her fault. It could have been that she was told these things, and then when he called her and was trying to break it off for whatever reason, whether it's because he didn't want to continue the affair or he, you know, like, was starting to get scared that he had told her things.
Mm-hmm.
If you reveal state secrets to someone and then you try to abruptly and rudely cut them off, like, he may have made her more of a threat than she was.
Yep.
By reacting that way.
Especially because both Robert and John were obviously married at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So their affairs would have hurt both of their public images. And if she also knew too many secrets, it's not a far jump to say that they may have wanted her out of the picture.
Right.
But also, despite all of the evidence, her affairs are still technically not confirmed.
Right. Yeah. That's important.
It is very important. Donald Spoto, who wrote Marilyn Monroe, the biography, thinks that they were not romantic and only slept together once. That would be her and JFK. Mm-hmm. So his account was that they hung out four times. They slept together one time. Didn't mean anything to either of them.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the dispute about her affair with Robert Kennedy, is that the initial information was a tip from the author Frank Capel. He was going to publish a book on Robert Monroe's affair and claim that the Kennedys were responsible for her death. The FBI was like, this is ridiculous. There's a statement about this that came out. I think it came out in the Kennedy files, but I could be wrong about that. I will link it in the description if you want to go read that whole thing. You're welcome to. I skimmed it. But the FBI said it was ridiculous. One thing that was interesting is that Capel had
which part was ridiculous?
Sorry, they said that his whole story was ridiculous.
His whole story?
That she had been sleeping with Robert and that...
And you said, like, the initial tip came from him, the initial tip that they had an affair at all?
That they had an affair and that the Kennedys were responsible for her death. That was his book.
Oh.
So the FBI received...
He was the creator of that idea?
Well, he was the first that was going to publish a book on it, I think.
Okay, so the idea was out there before that.
Probably. Okay. And also, there's all of these other quotes from other sources that we've talked about.
Right.
So the FBI received a tip, and they tipped off Robert Kennedy that this book was going to come out.
Mm.
Capel had a history of lying in the press.
Ah.
So, very incredible source.
Yes.
I think that that's something that's interesting, even, you know, how these...
That was the vibe I got before you even said that.
Yep. These scandals can erupt if you hear a whisper about something, and people are like, oh, I think that's true. So I thought it was really important to mention that book.
These high-profile things are such a game of telephone.
Yep. I think that it was really important to mention Capel's book because he's a very incredible source.
Mm-hmm.
And so if this really did start with him, there's a lot to be questioned here. Personally, based on my research, I think it was very likely that she was having an affair with at least one, if not both, of the Kennedy brothers.
And he was trying to capitalize off of that.
Exactly. But we do have to take it with a grain of salt because we'll never know exactly what happened. So with the differing opinions and information, I'll leave you to your own conclusions. But that's the information that I have on that. So there you go. Her friendship with Field also would have been dangerous to both of them, even if they were just friends.
Right.
Like, even if they talked on the phone and they told her some things, there is evidence that she would debate Robert Kennedy on political issues, which means that she would know a lot.
Friends with a lot of powerful people in a lot of different respects. And Fields was the descendant of Vanderbilt, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's money and power and views that go against a lot of what the government and the country as a whole
and their views that Monroe happened to agree with.
Right. And traveling with someone who has that much money and power and, you know, influence in a way that the country was trying to go away from, traveling with someone like that abroad, like, that doesn't look great. And even if even from a point of view of not considering optics, like that could be very dangerous for both of them, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and also remember that Dr. Greenson, Engelberg, and her housekeeper were all involved with the Communist Party in some way.
Right.
So she did have a lot of strong connections to mm-hmm. communism. Even if she had absolutely no nefarious intent, would have kept these a secret until she died, you can still understand why the FBI would be concerned about a possible leak. So many of these documents on the Kennedys were released by President Trump in 2017, but 300 pages were kept private due to national security concerns. And,
right.
and the one detailing Monroe's affair is a less than credible source from there.
Document is less than credible?
No. I'm sorry. So the source that they mentioned in people talking about her affair was, again, Frank Capel.
The tip that
so
the FBI
So it's important
was given.
To note that that's less right. than credible. Again, I think that there's a lot of really compelling... there's a lot of really compelling evidence about her relation to the Kennedys, but I just wanted to bring to light that there's still a lot we don't know, and mm-hmm. a lot of these could be false.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to find exactly what on Monroe was detailed in the release documents. Another thing that's really interesting and I think important to note is that Monroe did keep a diary.
Okay.
She kept a close diary, and a lot of people think that a lot of the national secrets were in her diary.
Oh.
So... That's another reason
I was like, this is
going to
be so good for the investigation. She left a diary. And then...
No. So she did keep a diary. So that's another big security risk. And also had a tendency to gossip and to drink. So those are all problems. All right. So we're going to talk about 4 different conspiracies.
Oh, my goodness.
And I would love to discuss them.
Okay.
In my personal, very unprofessional opinion, they get less credible as we go.
Okay.
So the first conspiracy is that she was killed by the Kennedys.
Uh-huh.
She had kept a diary. And in it, she had wrote a lot of information about her conversation with both of the Kennedy brothers.
Okay.
So this included a detailed plan to kill Fidel Castro. Mm. Dangerous information.
So it's not just a thought that she was writing some secrets down in her diary. She was. She definitely was. Okay.
I had forgotten that detail. I didn't have it written before. Sorry about that. This conspiracy implies that Robert and... Or the most common version of it implies that both Robert and JFK were in on it. Peter Lawson, JFK's brother-in-law, was in on it. Dr. Greenson, her psychiatrist, her housekeeper, Murray, and Pat Newcomb were all in on it. But the story... So the theory...
You gotta convince me here.
Is that...
Okay,
so the theory is that they talked with the psychiatrist.
Who's they? The Kennedys?
The Kennedys and JFK's brother-in-law. They talked with the psychiatrist. They conspired together. And basically, she got a prescription written... for a sleeping pill that they knew that she would probably abuse. So the idea is that they gave her all of the instruments to kill herself and knew that she would do it herself.
Hmm. Okay.
So see, that's not as crazy.
Right.
So the theory isn't that they went and stabbed her, though some people might believe that.
I feel like that one would be pretty obvious if she was stabbed.
That's why it was a joke. So because she had a history of attempted suicides, they were like, let's give her something that'll work. I think that this is very interesting, especially knowing that she was prescribed the sleeping pills just days before she actually died. So that's it's an interesting one.
It's interesting. It almost seems a little too obvious, like prescribing that quickly.
People also think that according to that one FBI file, the plot was meant to silence her because she was a liability.
Right.
So the second conspiracy is the mafia.
I love a mafia conspiracy.
Yes. So it seems very far-fetched to me because there's not a lot on it. But basically the idea is that she was way in over her head and they wanted to take her out. She was thought to have a relationship She was thought to have a relationship with Johnny Roselli, who was part of the mafia, and was, quote, threatening to blow the lid off his operations, unquote.
For what gain?
That's it.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Thanks.
you're going to love this one, too. So the third conspiracy is aliens.
Ah.
Not that she was killed by aliens, but that she knew too much about aliens. Oh. So the theory, which
is... take a little trip to Area 51 with one of the Kennedys?
That's the theory. So the conspiracy theory is that Dr. Stephen Greer claims that she was murdered by the CIA because she knew about aliens and the UFO crash in New Mexico in 1947 because John F. Kennedy had told her. So according to Greer, quote, she was threatening to hold a press conference to tell the world what Jack Kennedy had told her during pillow talk about having seen debris from an extraterrestrial vehicle at what the document calls a secret airbase, unquote.
Ooh. Do we have a conspiracy that she's a spy?
No, that's not my last conspiracy. Okay. It might be out there, but it's not one of the main conspiracies.
That's just something I came up with on the spot. Like, it's not something that I don't know has any credibility. Yeah. But, like, she definitely had power over powerful people.
Also, if you think about it, she had power on both sides. So the idea could be if she was fighting for one side, she was getting information on. Yeah, that could be interesting. Mm-hmm. So the fourth conspiracy is actually that she's still alive. This one is my favorite just because of how little evidence there is. The conspiracy is that Dr. Greenson staged her suicide and committed her to a mental institution. If this were true, this would actually be kind of a weird but kind way to handle it.
Yeah.
If he was like, we need to get her out of the press.
This is the one that I would hope happened.
Yeah. No, I read this and I was like, I want to believe this so badly. Yeah. Unfortunately, here's the research. John Alexander Baker wrote the book Marilyn Monroe, Alive in 1984. First of all, 1984? Come on. but he says...
A little on the nose, bro.
Yeah. He says he picked up a, quote, homeless, frightened, paranoid schizophrenic, unquote, who was hitchhiking in Nova Scotia at the time.
The author said he picked someone up?
Yes.
That he himself picked someone up?
Yes. A hitchhiker. He's the only one that saw her. Apparently, she told him of her days as a former movie star, and her singing voice was similar. So he thinks that she had just been released from the mental institution that Dr. Greenson had put her in. That is the extent.
I have so many questions. Did she look like Marilyn Monroe?
I think, yes, she did look like her. But it was also 20 years later.
That's the first question.
So this would have been his assumption of how she would have aged up based on the pictures he'd seen.
Was she put in a mental institution in Nova Scotia?
That's the theory. Also, why would Dr. Greenson... I got more.
Did they just release her into the wilderness?
That's his theory, is that she was there for 20 years and then they released her. Apparently to hitchhike.
They just opened the door and was like, they were like, get lost?
Also, honestly, the facts of this don't work.
No, they do not.
But one thing that I was like, sir, if you're gonna invent a conspiracy theory for a book, there's one thing you should think through, which is why would she tell you that she's Marilyn Monroe if she's just spent her entire life...
What if seems she's trying to escape the life of being Marilyn Monroe as an idea, as a concept, rather than as a person.
Exactly. So what I think is probably a lot more likely is one of two things. The first thing is he was making all of this up. That's the obvious answer. Seems the most likely. The other thing that I think, honestly, if his story is true, just to give him a little credit, is probably most probable, is that he picked up somebody else who was actually a homeless, frightened, paranoid, schizophrenic who thought they were Marilyn Monroe. Right. So, yeah. So, I don't think that theory has any credibility.
Your brain does crazy stuff to you, and if your brain is doing crazy stuff to you, you have to come up with ways to deal with it. And sometimes the ways that you come up with...
is to make a lot of money in a book deal.
No. I'm talking about the woman he picked up.
Like, right.
Sometimes the way that your brain has to deal with what is going on biologically is to make up things like that and make you believe that you are someone else.
Exactly.
Or that, you know, a lot of the other things that come along with paranoid schizophrenia.
If she is real, if this poor woman is real, I just really hope that she enjoys being a movie star and a singer more than Marilyn Monroe did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly just hope that it's a really happy place that she's in.
Right.
Mentally. I think it's more likely that she just doesn't exist at all, though.
Right.
All right.
I wouldn't even be surprised if, like, something similar happened, that he picked up a hitchhiker, then he was like, oh, she's a little crazy.
Yeah.
And then over time, that memory formed into, like, oh, she said she was a movie star, and, like, adding details in. That's what your memory does.
Yep. Or he created this fiction and that inspired him. He's like, what if I had picked up Marilyn Monroe?
That's what I'm saying. Half and half, like half true and half fabricated. But even if it is half fabricated, it might be something that he totally believes because...
Exactly.
Your memory plays tricks on you.
Exactly. So there is one more piece of information that I was excited about.
Tell me.
That I saved for last. And then we should discuss what we think really happened.
Okay.
So Dr. Greenson, who's Monroe's psychiatrist...
Yep.
He was quoted as saying, quote, I can't explain or defend myself without revealing things I don't want to reveal. It's a terrible position to be in to say I can't talk about it. I just can't tell the whole story. Talk to Robert Kennedy, unquote. I don't know the circumstances surrounding that quote. I wanted to mention, though, that sounds super suspicious when you hear it. Think about it this way, though. If you were a psychiatrist with a mentally ill patient who you'd been just trying to help for years, and suddenly you're being questioned and you don't feel like ethically you can reveal details about her life, mm-hmm. it makes sense that you'd be like, talk to someone else in this conspiracy. Right. So I just wanted to say that.
No, I agree with that. But I think there's a lot of ways that that could go. Like,
yeah, that's the thing.
It could be one of those things where he's like, ethically, I can't reveal this. Mm-hmm. It could be that he is fearing something or someone. Like,
right.
If I say this, then the spotlight is going to be on organization X or person X. And yep. then that makes it dangerous for me to be yep. alive and saying those things. It could be that he or that she revealed some national secrets to her and he can't mm-hmm. say them, you know. He can't even say that he knows them. Like, he can't be like, oh, I can't talk about it because it's a national secret, because then he becomes a target. Or
right.
or maybe the government doesn't know that he knows. There could just be so many different
ways. I was just going to say, I feel like this quote is interesting, and it also could be an interesting part of literally any theory.
Right.
So
right.
that's the thing.
Well, and that's what makes conspiracies, like, proliferate, is mm-hmm. because there's always some vague explanations and vague evidence that people feel the need to fill in.
Yeah.
Like, that is part of human nature. We fill in the gaps in everything.
Right.
And it helps us make sense of the world, and it has evolutionary benefits, mm-hmm. but, like, and you do it automatically.
Yeah.
You don't realize.
Yep.
Most of the time. So much of this could easily be that all of these theories are coming out of thin air because yeah. we just don't have all the information.
Yep.
Because we are the general public.
Okay, so this is the fact that I got very excited about. It's possible that I got very excited about this because I'd been fixated on it for mm-hmm. so long, but I hope you find it exciting. Okay. So P.I. Aldridge, who we talked about before, discovered...
Which P.I. was that? We talked about a couple.
Sorry. She I need a refresher. Very firmly believes... She's the one that discovered the bruises
okay.
on Monroe
okay.
on her hip and also a lot of other things. I linked her article as well. But she has been researching this case. She is very convinced that Monroe was murdered based on her investigation. Mm-hmm. But she found box 29 at the UCLA library, which is it's a box of papers on Monroe that Dr. Greenson wrote.
Okay.
And it's sealed until 2039, which means there's a whole box of information on this case that we don't have access to.
That the psychiatrist wrote.
That the psychiatrist wrote.
And this is at UCLA?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it at UCLA?
I don't know.
Was he like, he maybe was, you know, like doing research at UCLA or something?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Hmm. I'm like, in 2039.
Yeah, but why would it be?
It's either going to be so boring or we're going to discover something really interesting about this case. So Aldridge does, like I said, believe that she was murdered without a doubt. And she's been investigating the case. What she's doing, though, is pushing for the case to be reopened as a homicide investigation. And as of the writing of this article, which was in like 06 or 07, I think, she was asking the attorney general to speak to two people who are alive now and were present when she died, but haven't been asked to give a statement. So that's Sergeant Marvin Iannone, later chief of Beverly Hills Police Department, and Patricia Newcomb, who is Monroe's friend. They're both in their 80s, so there's a limited time for this to happen.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, at this point, it's like, of course we want to know what happened. Of course, if it was a murder, we want to get justice, right. even if that justice is only knowing what happened.
Right.
But it was so long ago. How do we know that any of the information we'd be getting is credible?
Yep. And also, all of the people we would charge are dead.
Right. All of the people who would be charged are dead. Or if there are people who were involved but weren't, like, actively part of the murder, like, we probably, unless it was something crazy, like, we probably couldn't charge them at all anyway. Like, the statute of limitations is probably up on any sort of involvement mm-hmm. other than, you know, like, really being part of it. So, like, I don't know. Is that worth it? Like, I don't have a yes or no answer, but it's something to consider.
I do think it's interesting. There's a lot of evidence here, and I kind of wonder if just for, you know, the sake of this case and doing her justice, if it would make sense to reopen the case.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that just, like, one thing I've seen a couple of different people say is that her mode of death needs to be changed at suspicious circumstances mm-hmm. rather than suicide. And I think that also alters her public image. So I think that that's something that would be really respectful to change.
I'm all in favor of an EDA, like an equivocal death analysis,
yeah.
Which for those of you who don't know, like that basically looks at suicides and figuring out was it actually right. a suicide? Because a lot of times people will try to make murders look like suicides. Mm-hmm. So I'm all in favor of that. I don't know how much more we'll get out of an in-depth investigation yeah. beyond that.
Especially because one was conducted in 82, which was a lot closer 82 to the case.
And
but again, LA in the 80s, I'm just saying.
LA, yeah. I mean, LA in the 80s, known for not being the most credible.
Although they do well now.
I don't know. I don't keep that close of attention on individual police departments.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I don't even remember. What was I saying?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
So, Rachel.
Yes.
What do you think happened?
Aliens. Aliens. No. As much as I would love it to be aliens, actually, okay. Maybe I am going to dive into this a little bit. I think that there's a lot of things that the government does that we don't know about. Yeah. Aliens might be one of them. It is kind of difficult to believe that we live in such a massive universe and that we are the only living beings.
Yeah.
But is Marilyn Monroe connected to that? There's a lot of things that would have to happen in order for that to be true.
Yep.
There would have to be life outside of Earth. Mm-hmm. The American government would have to know about it. She would have to have access to it and have to, like, there's just so many steps
and
to it.
They would have had to know about it in the 60s and still not have released that in 2021.
Right.
Yeah.
The mafia, that's funny. Still alive is what I want to be true.
Feels unlikely.
Also,
honestly, that's one that I hope, like, I would love for that to be true. If it is true, I kind of hope we never know.
Hmm.
So that she can just continue to live in peace rather than people right. continuing to look for her, you know?
Yeah. And if that is true, you know, this whole investigation may have been to throw people off. You know, people could have been paid off to say some of those things that we are looking at as not credible. Like, that could have been right. something that people were paid to say to help distract from her getting off the grid. Like,
exactly.
The idea that she was killed by the Kennedys, I don't know. Like, I think there are a lot of powerful people who do a lot of very bad things.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that being in a position of power does not necessarily mean that you do bad things.
Right.
Especially to the point of murder. Like, yep. everyone does bad things, but to assume that someone is, like, capable of the evil of murder because they're in a position of power is a bit of a jump. But I see the validity in her being considered a liability.
Mm-hmm.
But the question that I don't have the answer to is who considered her a liability?
Right.
Was it the Kennedys? Was it the FBI? Was it, like, the country as a whole?
Right.
Was it someone who was scared of communists? Like,
yeah.
could it have, it very easily could have been someone outside of the government, like, completely outside of the government.
It could have been her psychiatrist. Maybe she said something terrifying. It could have been a lot of different things.
Also have to remember, you know, we are, it's in 1962, like, you also have to remember that in 1962, we're, like, 10 years out of McCarthyism.
Yeah.
So, do you know what McCarthyism
no.
is?
No. I was going to ask.
In the 50s, people got really freaked out about communism.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just didn't know the name.
And,
okay.
Yeah, and then there was some, like, witch hunts.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, of people who were accused of being communists who lost
yeah.
their jobs and, like, things like that.
Monroe was also really loud and proud equal rights, civil rights advocate.
Yeah, like, there are yeah. a lot of people that she could have been enemies with. So, you know, people who are really scared of communism, like, it may have been an instance of some sort of post-McCarthyism mm-hmm. fear, seeing her as a liability. But to say that it was the government, you got to be careful with those claims.
Like, definitely.
The government is kind of often used as a scapegoat, kind of like when we talk about, I don't know, like social media, and we're like, they are watching us. Like, who's
yep.
they?
Yeah.
You know, the government is so big that to say that it was the government is just a bit of a cop-out.
Yeah.
When you get more specific with it, there's possibilities there. I don't know. I don't necessarily have a formed opinion.
Yeah.
On what exactly happened, but I wouldn't be surprised if national security concerns were a part of it.
Yeah.
I definitely would not be surprised by that. I don't know that it's the whole thing. I yeah. don't fully agree with any of these theories.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to come up with what actually happened with very limited and vague evidence is nearly impossible.
Yep.
So my guess is it's probably a mix of a lot of things. I wouldn't even be, I wouldn't be surprised if it was a suicide, though.
That's actually what I was going to say. I think after all of this research, I so badly want it to be that she was okay, that it was, you know.
Yes.
But I think after reviewing all of the research, by the time I came to the end of, like, obviously you can't get to the end of all the research, but when I got to the point I got to, I'm really convinced that I do think that all of these things played a role. I think that probably her affairs with the Kennedys led her to the brink. I think she was very, probably did know national secrets and was very stressed because of that. I think her housekeeper probably didn't know how to handle the situation. I think Dr. Greason probably didn't, like, handle it well. I think all of those things are true. But at the end of the day, to be honest, unless some other research comes to light, I believe that this was either a suicide because she was crazy overwhelmed and stressed, or an accidental overdose if she was drunk and couldn't sleep or something like that going on.
Or she was like, I just am so horribly stressed and depressed by my life right now. I'm just going to take a couple of these so I can sleep for like a day.
And
just
so
escapism.
I think it was probably either an accidental death or a suicide. Now, that being said, I would honestly be happy if the case were reopened and we could, if there was a way we could know that for sure or investigate it more thoroughly. But I do think that it was probably not nefarious, her death. I think that it probably was really sadly either accidental or a suicide.
I mean, regarding what I said with, like, how useful would an investigation be?
Yeah.
I would be happy to see an investigation be reopened, despite what I said. I just don't think that we can expect it to turn anything useful up. It was a long time ago, and we've improved our investigating a lot in those last 60 years, but evidence and insights and stories, like, they degrade over time. So it might be worth it, it might not be. I wouldn't totally be surprised if it was a suicide, but it was almost like an encouraged suicide. Not in what you were saying about like people wanting her to commit suicide. I mean, that's definitely a possibility, but what about if it was a suicide and people were covering for her and providing her with these things, not because they wanted to off her and they wanted her to do it herself, but because they really understood where she was coming from and, like, this is a lot and you're going to, like, maybe they didn't say this to her, but they might have noticed, like, she's going to be miserable her whole life.
Right.
It may have been something where they're like, assisted suicide, like,
the other thing
might be the best thing for her.
The other thing that I was wondering, and I have absolutely
which is a terrible thing for them to say.
No, we'll
make that clear.
A terrible
thing for them to, like, participate in if that's what happened. But, you know, psychiatry in the 60s.
Yeah.
It is also very questionable.
Yep. Another thing that I wanted to just kind of throw out there is the fact that her mother dealt with mental illness and was in an asylum, like we talked about in the beginning. And I imagine asylums in the 60s, not good.
Horrible.
Not good. So part of me also wonders if
she was going to be committed.
If she was going to be and she was preventing that. That's something that's I was wondering about. I don't have any evidence for that. But even just looking at
We're talking about conspiracies.
Yeah, just looking at her overall profile, that would be my theory.
But
All of that being said, I think there are about an endless number of things we could say about this topic, especially.
I really don't think it's any one of these. I think it's multiple. I think there's also things that play into it that no one has theorized ever.
Yep. Listeners, I would encourage you, please let us know what you think. We're genuinely curious. I really want to know what you guys think. Also, I linked all of my sources in this description. If you get really into it, I would... I could not be happier than if one of you went and read all the sources and sent me, like, a detailed essay to our Gmail. I would love that.
Lauren.
Yeah.
What's our Gmail?
Our Gmail would be hyperfocuscast@gmail.com. Hyperfocuscast@gmail.com.
You can also send us your insights on Instagram at...
Yep. That would be hyperfocuspod.
Or on Twitter.
Hyperfocus_pod.
I was going to say or on TikTok, but
they could tag us on TikTok.
You could make a video with your opinion on TikTok.
Yes, please do. On TikTok, we are Hyperfocus Pod.
I had to think about that. Yes, we are. anything else? Do we have anything else to announce today?
I don't think we do.
Anywhere else to send people? Oh, yes, we do.
We do?
Yeah. We now have a Facebook page.
That's true.
And a Facebook group. So
we would also love for you guys to talk about your theories there. We could all have a discussion.
Yeah. So Facebook page is where you can follow us and get more information about the podcast. The Facebook group is more for discussions and for all of you listeners. If you want to discuss theories with each other, if you want to present us with new information, we will be on there every now and then contributing to these discussions. So if you have anything you want to talk to us about, we'll set up discussions for
that's definitely one of the best ways to reach us.
Yeah, that one's gonna be fun.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that.
Just for both the Facebook and the group, the page and the group, Hyperfocus : a podcast for chaotic minds. If you find the page, you can click on the group from there, or you can go directly to the group. You will have to request membership, but we just put that there so we don't get bots.
Yep.
It's very easy to get on there.
Yep. All right. Well, that's all we got for you today, but we love ya.
Stay chaotic, babes. What were we talking about? Oh, we were telling our FBI agents to get lost because we don't want them to.
And then I mentioned
be
that
dropping in on us. And
we're only insulting the LAPD and LA FBI from 1960s to 1980s. So I think we're in the clear in terms.
The LAPD in the mid to late 20th century is my favorite scapegoat.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.